Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City, and I welcome you. Every day, from all over the world, and all the affiliate stations that carry this program, we take on the issues that are not being taken to issue by other major media or alternative media, always beginning with the latest on health and healing, as we will today. You may not have heard of spirulina. It's a single-cell algae, very important. But now there's new research showing what it can do to protect your kidney and reverse the damage from mercury in your body. Vegetarians and vegans, good news for you. You have a lower risk of heart disease. And another way of helping people with neurological damage, this time it's Parkinson's, and the fruit is blueberries. Also, can a mushroom prevent cervical cancer? And red clover, well, it helps improve blood flow and bone density and alleviates menopausal symptoms, plus a lot more. Always some quality peer-reviewed literature. From our environmental segment today, we're going to talk about climate change and the rising CO2, but that will actually affect the quality of food, and I'll explain why. From our public health segment today, groundbreaking new study, 42% of all drug reactions are vaccine-related. Share that with you. Also, I've been doing a series now for over 5 years about the overreach of the government into our lives, ways that they really shouldn't, and yet we're funding these bureaucracies and these moves. For example, out in Wyoming, there is an issue with a couple, Andy Johnson and his wife, Kathy, and they just built a little tiny pond so they could have fresh water in their 8-acre ranch. Now the government says, you can't do that. We're going to give you a $75,000 a day fine for building your own pond on your own land. We'll get into that. Also today, on other issues that are important, this audience has heard of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. These are people representing about 300 of the major corporations who work in secret to get your state legislator to pass laws that benefit them, not us. Now they're trying to limit any form of pollution so that they don't have to pay. Also, we've been told the housing market is booming, the value of houses are up, and that's a good sign that we're in recovery. No, it's not. It's a lie. From Mike Whitney, from Counterpunch, it's all smoke and mirrors. I'll tell you the truth about where we're at in our real estate and where we're likely to go in the next 24 months. Also, I've been doing a series on poverty in America. Now, I'm not referring to the old poor, where I came from in Appalachia, or down in the bayou of Louisiana, or the dirt farms of Alabama or Mississippi. The new poor. How many? Listen to this. 80% of all U.S. adults face near poverty, unemployment. That's according to the latest survey. That's 80%. Crime's down. So why is it that police aggression has increased? David Lindorf. So we have a lot to share. But also throughout this entire hour, we call it Talk Back because you have an opportunity to call in and share your questions and concerns and issues. Our number, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And if for any reason you're traveling and you're not near a computer or a land-based station that you would normally be listening over, call a number. You can listen over the telephone. A lot of people are. 712-432-7231. That's 712-432-7231. Let's begin. Spirulina is used by most holistic physicians and clinicians, from holistic nurses and chiropractors to naturopaths, and for good reason. It's loaded with protein. In fact, there's more protein in spirulina than there is per weight in dry weight in a steak or cheese or milk or fish. Most people don't know that, but it is. But there are other things in spirulina, and one of them is it's known to help detoxify the body. It's terrific. We were told for decades that the silver fillings, which are actually 52% mercury in our mouth, amalgams, every time you chew, every time you have a cold or hot beverage, it releases small amounts of mercury into the bloodstream. Also, when you eat fish, you're going to get some mercury. Not good. Or you get a vaccine, like a flu vaccine, you're getting a lot of mercury. Here's the latest from the peer-reviewed Journal of Food Chemistry and Toxicology. Here's what it says. Quote from Natural Society. Mercury can significantly damage the immune and nervous systems and the kidneys. And a new study indicates that the deep sea superfood spirulina is a viable treatment for mercury toxicity. University of Rajasthan in India did the research on spirulina, and not only does it protect your kidneys, but it also can help reverse damage done by toxic mercury. And so that's good. Quote, when the kidneys of the mice were taxed with mercury chloride, and then they were given the spirulina, it made a difference. Quote, when mercury treatments were given, the damage was reversed, and that's important. So, let's say that you're an average person, and you've been eating the kind of foods most people eat, drinking the beverages most people drink. You have damaged your kidneys and your liver. You're not quite sure what to do to detoxify. Well, one of the best detoxifications there are would be to have red cabbage juice once a day, a 16-ounce glass, with green apple, put in some vitamin C, and 1 tablespoon of spirulina. Now, that's not difficult to do, and you do that once a day, and that can help detoxify you. I have a new film it's done, it's out. In fact, it just won last week the very prestigious Houston International Film Festival, one of the oldest, most prestigious film festivals in the world. It won the special jury selection, which is their highest honor. And the title of the film is Chew on This. And I spent a year traveling and filming where our food comes from. Now, I haven't brought it out yet because I'm finishing a book that goes with it. And the book will be done in another 3 or 4 months, and then they'll both come out together. But in it, I ask a group of leading scientists and medical doctors, all board certified, this question. If you had to advise your patient that they should either eat principally a plant-based diet, like a vegetarian or vegan, or a carnivorous diet, mainly meat, you know, meat 2 or 3 times a day, dairy, which would you suggest and why? I was surprised. I didn't know that 6 out of 6 of the doctors that I interviewed, and these are heavyweights, Dr. Joel Furman, for example, all of them said they personally only consumed a vegan diet. They have seen thousands of their patients improve with every condition imaginable using a healthy vegan diet. And Dr. Colin Campbell, who, very famous scientist, he was the one who did the China study. And this was a study that took years. I believe at the time he was with Cornell University, and he studied the diet in China, all over China, over a long period of time, found out that they live a longer life, have less obesity and cancer and itises like ileitis, colitis, because they have principally a plant-based diet. And that became known as the China study. But we haven't emulated that in the United States, mainly because of advertising from fast food companies. I mean, just look, it's a Sunday. You're watching the ball game. What are you going to see advertised? If it's for a meal out, it's almost always deep fried. Now, I was just given a call before I came on the air because a friend says, "Hey, Gary, there's a little special on the Food Channel about your home down in Tioga, Texas." Was my home for many years. And sure enough, it was about this tiny little town. When I lived there, there was about 260 people. But it wasn't about my home, which was across the street from Clark's Barbecue. In fact, my home was the reason Tioga was built. It was built in the 1800s when they found healing water and then built a railroad track out there so people could come and take in the healing water. I called the place Healing Springs Ranch, and thousands upon thousands of the listeners would come down each year, mainly in the summer, and spend 1 or 2 weeks detoxing, meditating, working out, yoga, learning cooking, and even had an Indian teepee where an authentic Choctaw Indian would do sweat lodges. And what I found interesting was that it talked about this also being the home of Gene Autry. That's where he was born. I knew none of this when I bought the property. Oh, I knew that it was grossly overgrown, and this was 1989. And my brother Howard wanted to be a cowboy, and he had been living in West Virginia. And so he found the property, and I bought it, and he lived the cowboy life down there. He loved it. And I remember when I was out there, and I was on a riding mower because the grass had not been cut and it was so high. And so for 2 weeks, all I did was just cut these 100 acres, riding up and back and up and back. But every day, one or more people, generally old people, would come on the property and they'd pull up and say, "Hey, you the new owner?" I said, "Yes, yes, sir, I am." "When are you going to get the baths going?" I said, "Soon." I'm thinking I'd moved into the Twilight Zone. I'm thinking the baths. They want to come on the property and take a bath? And I told my brother, I said, "Howard, something's wrong with the people down here. Every day they're asking me, can they come on and take a bath?" He said, "Well," he said, "that's strange." I said, "Yeah, it is." So after all the grass was cut and started with a small herd where someone had some buffalo that they couldn't keep because they were just all manged and sick. And I'm an animal rescue person. I take sick animals and get them back to health and find them homes. Started with a couple buffalo, ended up with 57 of them. And my brother is an animal whisper person. I mean, animals love Howard. So he would go out there and just pet a 1,200-pound bull buffalo. It's just the darndest thing. You'd just be sitting out there where the whole herd would be laying down. He'd just be laying right up against one of them, just taking his time. And it was wonderful to see this, all kinds of animals. So anyhow, one day the mayor says, "Can we have a meeting with you? The town people want to see who you are and what you're going to do here." I said, "Fine." So Howard and I went across the street. We had to go, we walk across the railroad tracks and then walk across this little road and into this little town. The town only was 2 blocks long. And there in this little tiny town hall, it was packed with people. And they said, "Well, you know, where are you from? Who are you? What are you going to do here? Why are you in this little town?" And I said, "Well, I don't intend to do anything here. This is just a place where my brother, we're both from West Virginia, and my adult life, I've always lived on a farm or a ranch, and he also, and he wanted to come live the cowboy life down here, and I do organic farming." And suddenly the whole energy in the place changed, and they thought, okay. And it was fine. And the next day, suddenly, at the front door of the house were cases of stuff, like saddles and photographs of Gene Autry and all this old memorabilia, and then bottles. And I saw bottles from the 1800s. And then one of the guys said, I'll show you where your spring is. They buried the spring here about 40 years ago. But this is where Franklin Delano Roosevelt came to take in the mineral waters, and other famous people came. And this is also where Gene Autry was born. So I built an old Wild West town, and I built a saloon. No alcohol served in it, but because I found that the local kids had no place to go. So I built them a soccer field and a baseball field and a running track and volleyball. And then on the weekends, the sheriff would come in, and people go over there and dance and have a good evening, and then they'd clean up after themselves. Next day, you'd never know they'd used the place. Always were thoughtful, always polite. And so I made that old saloon into a Gene Autry museum. And you talk about neighborly. In season, every single day, someone would drop off a case of peaches or string beans. I was used to that in West Virginia. I had not seen that before, not even upstate in Stone Ridge. Just wonderful people. You just don't get nicer people than down in Texas. And that was just that little story, because there was only two things that Tioga was famous for at that time: Clark's Barbecue, and across the street was Healing Spring Ranch. So then on the Sundays, one of the people came and said, could we open up and do like a cover dish, you know, buffet here? I said, sure, go ahead. I only was on the place once a year. For 1 month in August, I was there. Otherwise, I was not there. My brother lived there. And so that became the place to go to. And they give you all you could eat of their authentic cuisine. I'm sure it wouldn't have met my standards. That's fine. It was for them. And so I'm watching this television program. No mention about all the healthy food and the organic pasture and all about the deep fried food at Clark's Barbecue. Now, Clark's Barbecue is famous. People would fly in from all around the area on helicopters to go eat there. I'm sure my brother snuck over there all the time and ate. He would talk about how people wasn't always into totally eat good eating. In any case, so I'm asked, okay, what about eating the big steak? Now, surely that can't be bad for you. You know, been eating steaks for a long time. All right, take a look. If you eat a steak back in the, let's say, 1800s, it would have had to have been grass-fed. There'd have been probably a range cow that had as little as 5% fat. It had been all lean muscle. And when it was slaughtered, there was no refrigeration. So people had to eat it very quickly or dry it out and then rehydrate it later in what became the jerky. And that's how a lot of pioneers got across the Great Continental Divide out in Colorado, where you have the Grand Canyon. Because if you didn't get across then, you didn't get across, and you would frequently perish. So they had to have something. Dried beans can last, and dried fish and dried beef called jerky, that can last. So they'd have a big barrel of this dried jerky. Then you're boiling water, you throw in the dried beef, and it would then rehydrate, and they'd have a stew. Kind of a boring diet, because there was not a whole lot you could take to be fresh. If you were smart, you would have different herbs and things you would find along the way, but otherwise you didn't. So a lot of people suffer from scurvy. Scurvy was one of the most common conditions that our settlers encountered. But otherwise, the meat that they would have eaten had no hormones. It had probably been disease-free, and that would have been a different type of meat if you were eating meat. They also had a lot of potatoes, because potato store. But today, the meat that you're eating, if you're a meat eater, even if it is considered all natural. That doesn't mean that it's certified organic, and it's still not healthy because meat has to be cooked. The cooking is what destroys the nutritional value of the meat, and it creates heterocyclic amines. That can play havoc with your intestine, your stomach, and lead to colorectal inflammation, polyps, and cancer. It can also, the chemicals in meat can cause inflammatory cytokines, which can damage your artery and your heart. So that is not healthy. And then you have to look at that compared to a healthy vegetarian or vegan diet. Now, according to a new study published in the peer-reviewed Public Health Nutrition, they looked at a group of vegetarians and vegans over a period of time, and what they found was that vegetarian and vegan diets lower the risk of heart disease, substantially lower it, and especially in African Americans. In fact, you have a 44% reduced risk of high blood pressure compared to those who consume a meat-based diet, and diabetes. So those are, you know, heart disease, you're going to lower by almost half. And that's only one of 27 studies showing that a vegetarian diet is a healthier diet. Blueberries, they're good for you. And if you're sick with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, dementia, heart disease, then I wouldn't suggest just eating blueberries. I would suggest that you have 3 tablespoons a day of wild blueberry concentrate. Now, that would be equivalent to at least a full quart of blueberries. Now, most people cannot eat a quart of blueberries. Most people would be lucky to eat a pint. But if you're eating it, taking down the concentrate, they have evaporated off most of the water, so it's really thick. But it's loaded with nutrition. This is from University of Newfoundland in Canada, and they have found that eating blueberries reduces your risk of diabetes and heart attack, and that's good. Now, when you think of how many Americans suffer from Parkinson's, it's big. We get 50,000 new cases per year, and that's increasing. And what they found is that there is a protein in your brain that is primarily found at the end of nerve cells that reside in nervous system structures. And these are called the presynaptic terminals. And this is an alpha-synuclein protein. And these terminals are responsible for releasing neurotransmitters. These are the chemical messengers that signal the neurons that a crucial element is coming through. So, when you have blueberries, you're helping to interfere in the process that can lead to Parkinson's. Quote, blueberry extract increased the lifespan and improved defects in fruit fly models. And this could be applicable to humans. So, blueberries for Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and dementia. We don't eat a lot of mushrooms in the United States. We should. We certainly don't eat maitake, reishi, my favorite mushroom, the most tasty mushroom, and one of the most versatile is the French stem mushroom. Now, don't be fooled with a French stem mushroom. There's a very little small head on it, and it looks similar to a shiitake mushroom head, about the size of a quarter. Frequently very brown and ridged, not appetizing to look at, but it is the stem that's delicious. What you do, you wash the stem and rinse it. Then you start at the bottom and you cut it, and it comes out to the size of a penny or a nickel. Very thin, little circles, just chop right up the stem. And then you gently stir fry that. Remember, mushrooms only release their nutritional healing power when they are heated. Raw mushrooms have very little nutritional value. Most people are not aware of that, but that's the fact. You become much higher in bioavailability of nutrients when they're heated. So you use a little bit of macadamia nut oil, mustard seed oil, or coconut oil. Those are the only three I would use. Then you can put in your seasonings. I like to put in tarragon and fresh mint. And it only takes 5 minutes. You gently heat the mushrooms with the oil and add a little Himalayan sea salt, about a teaspoon of tarragon, and then some fresh mint. And you stir that. Then you put that as a side dish, or you can put that into a stuffed potato, or mix it in with some brown rice. It's delicious. In any case, some new research shows that mushrooms can prevent cervical cancer. Now, this was presented at the Society for Gynecological Oncology at its 45th annual meeting on women's cancer. Now, just a few basics. We know that the human papillomavirus is present in most women. And your lifetime risk of acquiring genital human papillomavirus is 80%. But most of that will self-cleanse from the body. And for the most part, the human papillomavirus infections do not cause any health problems and are cleared by the human body. Now, certain strains, however, are more virulent, and a few of those strains, out of some 160, four of them could cause cancer. Now, human papillomavirus can be detected up to 99% of cervical cancer biopsies worldwide. And currently, there's no medication to treat the virus. There's only early intervention. I believe that the pap smear is the best single thing you can do. And that's what shows women that they have it, and then it can be dealt with. So, there's new hope. Why? Because of what is called AHCC. A is for active, H is for hexose, C is for correlated, and C is for compound. So the active hexose correlated compound, AHCC, that's a compound found in mushrooms, and it can help eradicate, kill the human papillomavirus, and even treat cervical cancer. Scientists in Texas treated cervical cancer cells with AHCC and incubated them for 72 hours. In addition, in a separate part of the study, they administered AHCC to mice with and without the human papillomavirus infection. They found that the AHCC totally, 100% eradicated the virus within 90 days and reduced tumor growth in vivo and in vitro. And that's what was presented to the Society of Gynecological Oncology. So I think that's very, very positive. So now you have a way of helping yourself if you should have a human papillomavirus or cancer. One other way to help yourself if you have cancer, according to Terabet Moderis University, is look at turmeric. Turmeric, of course, is what they use in curry dishes. But there's an active compound called curcuma, or curcuma longa, cure, C-U-R, cuma, C-U-M-A. And curcumin is one of the herbal compositions found in turmeric. And historically, all over the world where they use turmeric, it's been used to treat respiratory and inflammatory diseases, and even help wounds in healing. But now they found that there's 87% efficacy when it's been placed inside the polymeric nano carriers, and it makes a big difference. So this is helping cure cancer. And this was published in the International Journal of Nanomedicine. And finally, can fish oil prevent damage from strokes? Well, the first thing I would suggest anyone do who's had a stroke is immediately get hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Now, your doctor, your cardiologist may not be aware of this, but the more frequent you get hyperbaric after a stroke, the more healing occurs, the less damage to the brain, the greater recovery. But this is separate. This is a completely separate concept of using fish oil. And here is what the study says. Quote, stroke is the third leading cause of death in the United States. Can fish oil help? The answer is potentially yes. Scientists administered the active component DHA, which is found not just in fish oil, but also in flaxseed, for example, and in chia seed, walnuts. We know that strokes affect millions of people annually, and they're a major cause of disability. Well, in this case, using laboratory animal, they found that the ones that were given the DHA had a substantial protection than those that did not. And fish oil reduces the brain-damaging inflammation of free radicals. So if each morning you had your fish oil, you're going to be less likely to have a stroke that day, and you're more likely to have a healthier heart. So that's the latest on that. Now from our environmental segment, this comes from a study published in Nature Climate Change, a major journal. Quote, elevated levels of carbon dioxide can block plants' absorption of nitrates, leading to foods and crops with a reduced nutritional quality. That's the latest. This was done by Professor Bloom, University of California, Davis. The findings are based on data from field trials involving wheat that was grown in that environment. Now, here's what this means in lay language. Is it going to get hotter? Yes. Will there be greater drought? Absolutely. What is the consequence to plants? You do not have the same capacity for photosynthesis. As a result, what plants do grow will not be as nutritious. And therefore, you better make sure that you're eating nutrient-dense foods. I believe that the future of much of the agriculture in the United States within the next 5 to 10 years will have to be hydroponic, because there you can control for the nutrients to get into the food, and it's not affected by the sun or rain or drought or flooding. You're not damaging the soil because you're not planting in the soil. That is the future. And also, we hear about drugs that have reactions all the time. What people didn't know until this article was published is what role vaccines play in this. This is the latest study from Christina Sarich. Quote, a pioneering new drug study testing the safety of many common pharmaceutical drugs has revealed that almost half of all adverse drug reactions, from anaphylaxis to death, were caused by vaccines. The study is published in All Access Journal PLOS, entitled Adverse Drug Reactions, a Spontaneous Reports in Shanghai Pediatric Population. And then it goes on to talk about who knew? One more reason to be concerned about vaccine safety. Because, quite frankly, there is no such thing as a proven safe for all people vaccine. There never has been, and there can't be. But now we have the research of how dangerous they are, and they're hiding that from the world. And before we go to our break and your calls, and I'm going to open up the line in a moment to take your calls at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I believe that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, should be banned. After all, think of what they do. They represent anywhere between 200 to 400 of the biggest corporations in America. For over 30 years, they've been meeting in secret, once or twice a year, crafting bills that they give to the state legislators at these high-end resorts. The legislators take these back to their states and then pass these as laws. They pass over 20,000 laws. That's not fair. That doesn't represent you, the people of a state. It represents their interest. So I believe that any legislator that has passed any bill into law in any state, they should come forward and tell us what they received in return, why would they meet in secret, Why would they sponsor major corporations' interest above that of their own constituents in their state? And then I believe they should step out of political office. This is the latest. ALEC and big polluters try to attack limits on climate change pollution, one state at a time. Quote, last week the Kentucky legislature passed a bill to undermine national standards to reduce climate change pollution. The bill would prop up the profits of Kentucky's biggest polluters while saddling ordinary Kentuckians with higher electric bills. A coal-friendly bill may not be surprising in Kentucky, but this effort did not originate in the Bluegrass State. The bill's language mirrors legislation being pushed in state houses across the country by the American Legislative Exchange Council, a cabal of corporate giants, including the Koch brothers, Peabody Coal, ExxonMobil, and other fossil fuel companies. ALEC is known for creating so-called model bills designed to shrink public safeguards and protections. Often the bills are drafted by the very industry that would benefit from them the most. Now ALEC is trying to use state legislators to block our country's most significant effort to clean up the air and stabilize the climate. Power plants belch out 40% of all carbon pollution in the United States. That pollution drives climate change and threatens our health with asthma attacks and other respiratory problems. And yet there are no national limits on how much carbon these plants can dump into the atmosphere. The Environmental Protection Agency is about to change that. This coming June, it will propose carbon pollution limits for power plants. And strong limits could yield up to $60 billion in avoided climate change and medical cost over the next 8 years. Yet coal companies and other polluters are fighting carbon limits at every turn, and some have turned to ALEC's model build factory to thwart them at the state level. So that's what they're doing. Quite simply, ALEC is working with your state legislators, some of them, to make sure that the industries can pollute all they want and not have any upper limit. The sky's the limit when it comes to polluting, and that's how they want to keep it. I'm Gary Knoll. Just a few more things here. 80% of U.S. adults face near-poverty unemployment. Quote from CBS News. 4 out of 5 U.S. adults struggle with joblessness, near-poverty, or reliance on welfare for at least parts of their lives, a sign of deteriorating economic security and an elusive American dream. Survey data, exclusive to the Associated Press, points to an increasingly globalized U.S. economy, the widening gap between rich and poor, and the loss of good-paying manufacturing jobs as reasons for the trend. So, why is this important? Because on the one hand, we have a president and an administration that refuses just to be honest. Instead of saying, we will no longer support the offshoring of jobs, and we will no longer support any bank or financial company like Goldman Sachs that supports companies offshoring jobs, then it's just a matter of continuing to manipulate the very public that is so out of the loop on details and information. Here's how it works. Let's say that you work for a company that goes out and does research. I know such a person, by the way. Talk about living some negative karma. You take your research team and you scour the country and you find a company that doesn't have a lot of debt, that is has a good policy for their workers, that pays living wages and benefits, makes a good product, and has made one for 100 years here in the United States. Now you make an offer to that company after you've done their homework. You'll buy them. Let's say the company's worth $50 million. You'll offer them $70 million. Make it easy for them to say yes and get out. Now let's say they say yes. Then your company provides the bridge loan. And for this providing, you're going to make at least 10% right up front off the deal. Plus, you will own some unrestricted stock, meaning you don't have to wait a year or 2 years before you can dump it on the market. So you can pump and dump immediately. So you can announce this that you're taking over this company, the stock goes up, and then the real characters, the equity partners, they have a pool of capital, they have access to unlimited amounts of debt, they come in and they buy it not for $50 million its value or $70 million, but for $100 million. They then take $30 million above what the company got, and they fold that back into their company as fees. Now this poor company is saddled with $100 million in debt. How can they possibly survive? Well, in very good times, the average life of a company has been taken over 7 years and 2 months. In bad times, it can be about 4 years. Think of the 2,000 companies that were well-run, good companies, until they were taken over. And then think of Linens and Things and Circuit City as just examples. They would still be here today if they didn't have all that debt. Now, then you go in and you do an analysis and you say, look, we can't keep paying, you know, your employees a living wage, and the union's not good here. So they control the board now. They strip off all these perks they've given people or quality of life. They start firing people, and then they make a deal for China or India or Brazil. You create a factory there. You make this product. Right now, this product is a washing machine. And the cost before we send it off to a company to be sold, our cost out the door is $155 per washer. And the Chinese come back and say, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make that washing machine for $50 out the door. We'll put it on a barge. We'll bring it here to the United States. Okay. So you then get the Chinese up and going, making your machine. You close down the American branch. You put 200, 400, 500 people out of work. And that's what happened to over 10,000 factories in the last 12 years alone. That's 10,000 factories. Now multiply that by how many people worked in a factory, and you get an idea of how many millions of people lost their jobs. And by the way, your state senator, your state house member were all complicit in this. Everybody was complicit. And then you end up with factory towns that one time were booming and provided a quality of life, now are just empty. They're shells. They're ghost towns. Now, Walmart takes that washing machine that used to cost them $200 that they would sell for $500, and now their cost is $100. Now, they can sell it for $175. They can sell that washing machine for less than anyone else could make that machine in the United States. So they virtually control the market. And then they end up selling that machine back to someone that used to work in that factory who needs a washing machine. That's the irony. There's virtually no solidarity in the United States today. It is zero. It is dead. It is flatline. This whole thing of kumbaya, you know, we'll work together. No, used to be that way, not today. Today, it's every person for themselves, and no one even thinks about going into a Walmart or Kmart or any place else and buying something that was more often than not made at terribly exploited labor conditions in another third world country so we could sell it cheap. And so that's how it works. So just imagine now, before you vote for anyone, you say, go on the record now that at no point will you support offshoring. In fact, you're going to go after the companies and take away all government subsidies for any company, any bank, anyone that's involved in any process, the hedge fund people, the equity partnerships, the banks, the manufacturing, if they don't keep it in the United States, and then go one step further, reverse the trend. How do you do that? It's relatively simple. We have an excess of talented people who need to work and would love to work at a living wage and reindustrialize America. How do you do that? You'd be competing against China and Taiwan. Yes and no. First off, you can thank Bill Clinton and his wife and everyone else, the corporate Democrats, for NAFTA, GATT, and the World Trade Organization. This didn't help Americans, but it helped the people who are the financial elite behind them. Make America an industrial zone, meaning you give them incentives. You give them the land and the factory for free. We have thousands of these around the United States. Then the federal government comes in and helps clean these up, meaning make them functional again. And then help the companies get up on their feet so that the workers can at least compete against other workers, because we can compete in quality, but we can't compete in cost. After all, in Bangladesh, they can make dresses for 14 cents an hour. I used to do lectures, and I was the nutritionist who was brought in by the Ladies International Garment Workers Union, and I did classes showing them how to eat better. And after a year, these people lost weight. They overcame diabetes and high blood pressure, you name it. It was wonderful. And these people weren't rich, but at least they made a living wage. So why not have fair trade zones where, depending upon how many people you can hire, you pay them a living wage? And you do that by not allowing these cheap items to be flooded into the United States. That means you're going to have to go up against some of these trade organizations. So what? Dennis Kucinich was the only one who had the courage to say he would get us out of NAFTA. No one else would do that. So we've got to at some point decide as a nation, do we want to see all of our manufacturing lost so we can buy stuff at Walmart? Or do we want to get out of these trade organizations and protect American workers and the environment that they live in? You could do that. It will require some subsidies, but I'd rather subsidize a small factory, hiring people and getting them to compete in the marketplace, than I would giving that money to the military-industrial complex. And we have to decide our priorities at some point. Anyhow, that's my thoughts on it. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. You can also watch this program each day by just going to ustream.tv. That's the letter U, S-T-R-E-A-M, and search for Gary Nall. We're going to take calls now, 888-874-4888. We had a little technical glitch earlier, and those who try to call in, that's why I didn't go to calls earlier. Now that glitch has been resolved, let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, you gave us quite a lecture on the other day. I got an email here from Mary. She's from Texas. And she said that she had been to a lecture of yours in Austin, Texas, which was supposed to last for about an hour. And she says that she recalls it lasted like 3.5 hours. It was standing room only. And she never saw so many people. She said there must have been about 2,000 people at the lecture. And it was the most galvanizing lecture she'd ever gone to. And she said last night she tried to get onto the lecture on the internet, and she couldn't because it was filled. And she said thankfully a friend of hers who lived nearby invited her to come and listen. She said, I missed the first 15 minutes, and she said that I missed the first 15 minutes. The rest of the lecture just completely changed her views on life. And so her question, of course, is what did I miss in the first 15 minutes?
All right. It was a two-hour lecture, and the theme of the lecture was honoring what is sacred in life. And my overarching theme was, and it's a radically different theme, is that I do not believe that we have a uniquely defined duality in life. And I believe as long as we continue to indoctrinate ourselves that we have, like, good and evil, 1% and 99%, love and hate as separate entities, that we will never grow. So instead, I simply started by asking a series of questions. Do we really have evil? We can do evil things, genocide and rape and killing. That's evil, but it doesn't start evil. Everything starts as good. And then based upon our conditioning, every choice we make is a choice to either honor the light of our experience in life, or it takes us one step away from that light. And it's very easy once you take so many steps away, possibly by your own experience, possibly by maladaptive behavior, possibly by being exposed to a world that is cynical, selfish, and greedy, maybe in your own environment. And then one day, you don't even trust yourself, so how are you going to trust other people? And you're not a caring and nurturing and giving person anymore, as you once were. All babies are born the same as far as their energy goes. It's what happens to them as they develop, depending upon the quality of their parents and society, and then free will. And then one day, you could be one of those people who are depressed or anxious, and it's not about your brain chemical being imbalanced. It's about whether or not you're making judgments from the light and the sacredness of life, and therefore honoring life. And think what would happen if we simply honored the purity of a higher consciousness. We wouldn't have racism, sexism, we wouldn't have greed, we wouldn't have a separation of wealth and non-wealth, we wouldn't have the destruction of our planet, we wouldn't be living in denialism and avoidance, we wouldn't want to hurt other people, we would see what was sacred in other people as well. But we haven't been living by that model for a long time, and some people in societies ever. Hence, we only find our own personal truths from our leaders and those who believe that ours is the only religion or ours is the only political system. And then they fight everyone else who's not theirs, and hence the other. So we've learned how to demonize anything that's other. And I gave an example yesterday about Orthodox medicine. If Orthodox medicine is doing things that actually hurt its patients but profit itself, is it really practicing good medicine? It's not practicing good medicine, but it's practicing the only medicine it's allowed to practice. So it must live in denialism against the harm it does. But that's true of any political system. It's true of any social system. You will never see the weakness, limitations of your own system once you are honoring its rituals and creeds and dogmas and loyalties, because you're rewarded by your group. And I'm saying there's universal truth. Universal truth is a great equalizer. But how few people in this world actually live by universal truths? If they did, then we wouldn't have conflict resolution the way we do today, by bombing people in drones and kill lists and the evisceration of our Constitution, Bill of Rights. And yet you have people call themselves patriotic Americans or good Americans, both on the left and right. And then you ask, do you believe that the Bill of Rights or the Constitution is of value? Do you believe that should be our standard? If they say yes, then say, well, why have you not protested the attack against freedom of speech or assembly or the loss of our habeas corpus right? And then you start seeing the contradiction. Well, that doesn't mean that they're evil. It doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means that they have gone so far away from the truth of how they should be living and the ideals of how they should be living that now they're in that dark, dank, cold place where they have to deny any other virtue and they have to double down on their own beliefs, and hence the chronic need for conflict. And so my talk was a two-hour discussion about the fraud of duality and how we shouldn't be living in a dualistic world. And I gave an example then 1% versus 99%. I said, how many people are against the 1%? All these hands went up. I said, and how many of you think you're the 99%? Hands went up. I said, all right, then let's open up your wallet and see what credit card you carry and where you bank and what food you ate and where you bought your clothes and who financed your house and your car. And when you start looking at the movies you see and the television you watch, that's all 99%. So the 99% only exists because you empower them. How many of them have gotten away from empowering those people? Because it's just an illusion. Power is an illusion because people want you to believe that you don't have the power to make the right choices for your own sustainability. So they pretend to be experts. And then when they pretend to be experts, if you're close to your authentic self, you're not going to buy that. But if you're disconnected from that self, then you feel helpless. And anyone who's charismatic and a good charmer, think of all the fraud in the New Age movement, you know, promising miracle treatments. Buy this book, you know, come to the, you know, watch on television. It's all nonsense. So you re-empower yourself. You're not going to be taken advantage of. Then there's just you making choices and others making choices. And if you make the right choices for yourself and the world, then you're one less person buying their genetically engineered food, shopping in their stores, using their banks. But you can't say, we're the victims, we're 99, and they're the people in power. Yeah, they have power. You could take away that power. Yeah, they have money, inordinate amounts of money. But don't look at the money in power. Look at what you've done to disempower yourself and why you and a lot of other people refuse to stand up and make the right choice. But that takes courage. Having courage to stand up means you have to look in the direction of your pain and your rage and do something constructive about it. That's just a brief synopsis. We're out of time. Thank you, Luann, for your call.
Okay.
I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in and share. We look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Carolyn Baker, who's standing by. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Gary. How are you this evening?
Good. This week we lost Robert Knight on WBAI. We lost John Judge, one of the great investigative journalists who brought us the truth about JFK's assassination and Robert F. Kennedy's assassination, Malcolm X's assassination, and Martin Luther King's assassination. But we also lost Michael Rupert, who had done so much with his books and videos, and he did a program following this one every Sunday night. And so he's not here. We will have an hour tonight devoted to remembering him, and we're going to turn it over to you to start that journey right now.
Thank you, Gary.
Right now, a tribute to Michael Rupert here on the Progressive Radio Network. Please stay with us.